Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you on this Tuesday, the 23rd of August. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Eunice Wanjiro in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Kerry pledges to help finance Kenya's next general election and provide aid to South Sudan.
I am also announcing nearly $138 million in new aid from the United States to the people of South Sudan. The new funds will be used to provide food, water, and medicine to those in need.
Zambia postpones the inauguration of the president-elect pending constitutional court ruling on the election results, and Malian jihadists plead guilty to orchestrating the destruction of historic mausoleums in Timbuktu.
Ladies and gentlemen, with deep regret and pain, I have to enter a guilty plea, and all charges against me are accurate and correct.
These stories and more to come on this edition of Africa Link. Don't go away.
Top story.
We begin in Kenya, where on Monday, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry held talks with Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta on regional security and terrorism. He later met with the foreign ministers of Kenya, Somalia, South Sudan, Sudan and Uganda for talks focusing on a faltering peace agreement in South Sudan and looming elections in Somalia. The U.S. announced that it will help finance next year's general elections in Kenya to ensure that everything runs smoothly and provide new aid to South Sudan to help in the provision of basic needs. Andrew Wasike from Kenya brings us more.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has announced new aid packages for war-torn South Sudan, saying that 40% of the people caught up in the violence have no access to food, water and medical services. He said that he had spoken to foreign ministers from Kenya, South Sudan, Sudan and Somalia, and they had agreed to move forward with the deployment of a regional protection force authorized by the UN Security Council to bring peace in South Sudan.
This is not an intervention force. This is a protection force. Warring parties have terrorized and abused non-combatants. 40% of the population is without enough food, and they're witnessing record levels of inflation in their economy. So help is urgently needed in order to save lives. And that is why President Obama asked me to come here today. I am also announcing nearly $138 million in new aid from the United States to the people of South Sudan. The new funds, the $138 million, will be used to provide food, water, and medicine to those in need.
On Kenya's elections next year, Kerry said that President Kenyatta had assured him of peaceful elections next year and that his country will provide $25 million to help in the electoral process.
We are investing over $25 million in this year in order to support your electoral process coming into next year. What does that mean? It means we want to strengthen your election operations. We want to have you have the ability to carry out election observation during the elections. It means we want to see the full participation of women and youth in the election. And that there are mechanisms there to support any kind of dispute resolutions.
U.S. Secretary John Kerry also announced that his country will boost its funding for refugees in East Africa. He said that the U.S. will also aid in repatriating over 350,000 Somali refugees from the Dadaab refugee camp.
That the United States will be providing additional $117 million more in support for refugees, returnees, and drought victims in the region. And we will also contribute an additional $29 million to the UNHCR's new supplementary appeal in support of the safe and voluntary return of refugees to Somalia.
Speaking on behalf of East African foreign ministers, Kenya's Ambassador Amina Mohamed said that they had all agreed on the deployment of a protection force in Juba.
You know, watch this situation just go from bad to worse. And so we came together and we came up with this communique, the foreign minister's communique. And one of the main pillars of that communique was actually this whole idea of a protection force in Juba. And we immediately started conversations amongst the chiefs of defense forces to see what was possible in the shortest period of time.
Andrew Wasike filed that report. Today, the U.S. Secretary of State will travel to Sokoto, Nigeria, the historic Muslim city in the remote northwest, followed by talks with Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari in Abuja. His visit comes just a day after Boko Haram Islamists attacked a village near the northeastern Nigerian town of Chibok. While in Sokoto, Kerry is expected to speak on the importance of resilient communities and religious tolerance in countering violent extremism. I spoke to Dr. Kabir Adamu, a security expert in Abuja, and wanted to know how significant it was that Kerry is first going to northern Nigeria and then on to Abuja.
It's a very important visit, especially given the issues that has already been indicated that we'll be discussing while he's in Nigeria. I know the U.S. Embassy has mentioned counterterrorism, and the Nigerian counterterrorism strategy is at a stage now where any support it will get from, you know, countries like the U.S. will be very, very welcoming. Issues around the declining economy, as well as the fight against corruption, and then, of course, the human rights issues that have affected Nigeria. These are some of the points that the U.S. Embassy mentioned that John Kerry will be discussing while he's in Nigeria. Now, in terms of the fact that he has centered on the northern part of the country, unfortunately, I think it's going to further polarize the country, in the sense that already there is a perception that the Nigerian president has concentrated his efforts more on the northern part of the country, and by so doing, neglecting especially the south. This visit is concentrated only on the north, which appears to be the case. I think there is going to be a lot of criticism from the southern half of the country.
So now that he is going to the north, who will he be talking to there, and what will he be seeking to achieve?
What we know, he will be meeting the northern governors. It's likely that he will be meeting the Sultan of Sokoto. Now, the Sultan of Sokoto is the most eminent traditional religious leader in northern Nigeria. He enjoys a lot of influence in northern Nigeria and has played a critical role in terms of the counterterrorism strategy, especially the narrative around Muslims supporting or not supporting the Jamaat al-Islam al-Dawati wal-Jihad, otherwise called Boko Haram. So it will be a significant meeting. And in terms of meeting the northern governors, it's likely that the discussions will center around the attempt to revamp agriculture.
What sort of welcome is he likely to get in northern Nigeria?
As you know, the relationship between Nigeria and the U.S. has been improving compared to what was under the immediate past government. And the U.S. has made significant contributions, both in terms of, training support, in terms of equipment supply, promises around equipment supply and all that. Most Nigerians, especially in the north, are very happy with that contribution by the U.S. as against what obtained under the current government. Then it's very important to emphasize the reception, which is historic, that was given to President Buhari when he visited the United States. And that resonated very well with northern Nigerians. So I would expect a reciprocation of that type of reception to be accorded John Kerry when he visits Sokoto and Abuja, as the case may be. I would expect him to get a huge welcome, and a lot of elites and of course the northern population will go a long way towards reaching out to him and facilitating as well as supporting whatever cause he's trying to achieve in Nigeria, as against what would have happened if the stance that was under the immediate past government is still existing as of today.
Dr. Kabir Adamu, security expert in Abuja.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
The inauguration ceremony of Zambia's president-elect Edgar Lungu, which was scheduled to take place today, has been put on hold pending constitutional court ruling on the election results. Defeated presidential candidate Hakainde Hichilema of UPND filed a petition last Friday challenging the re-election of President Edgar Lungu. The court has 14 days to hear the petition and should make its ruling within a month. I spoke to DW's Kathy Sikombe, who is in Zambia, and started by asking her what the situation was like in the country and how ordinary Zambians were reacting to the election petition.
The situation on the ground hasn't been very good, especially in the southern province of Zambia and the western side of Zambia. We have seen a situation where families and members are not talking to each other based on their political alignment. So we've seen a lot of regionalization, a lot of tribalism has come up as a result of this election. And in the past few weeks, days, I should say, we've actually seen a new phenomenon in terms of political violence, where people in the southern province as well as in the western province are destroying government property. They are burning each other's houses. They are putting planks on the roads to stop traffic from the other political side, you know, to move, and things like that. So it's been quite violent.
And what can you tell us about the independence of public institutions like the Electoral Commission in the country?
The Electoral Commission is supposed to be an autonomous body that conducts elections. But also one thing that I must mention is that the Electoral Commission members or commissioners that sit on the board are elected by the president. So you can see that from that, it may be difficult maybe to act in an independent capacity, because there's a saying that you do not bite the finger that feeds you. And that's why there's been calls in the past that, you know, the Electoral Commission should completely be detached from the executive to ensure its total and complete independence.
I was speaking to DW's Kathy Sikombe in Lusaka, Zambia.
Africa on the move.
Many women in Africa are still reluctant to use mobile phones and computers. In the West African state of Benin, Gileta Muyabi wants to change this. She's helping women enter a sector often perceived as male-dominated. She has 15 years of experience working in the information technology sector herself. This report by Alexa Maya is presented by Virgil Reinhard.
Gileta Muyabi is talking to a room full of young women in her company's premises in Benin. Some already have small businesses, while others are still in the planning stages. For all of them dreaming of success, Muyabi has this advice.
It's very important to be realistic about what it takes to realize your dreams.
To nurture that attitude, she meets the young women once or twice a month. She advises them, motivates them, and teaches them. With her organization, World Women Foundation, she wants to help create tomorrow's women leaders in IT.
Many young women feel uncomfortable about entering this field. For the few who are already working in it, exchanging ideas is important. This mutual advice helps them become leaders and feel confident about a future in this sector. In the end, the achievement can contribute to the development of the country.
Apart from mentoring women in IT, Muyabi is also involved in another project called Direct Pay. It is a new internet platform that offers different ways of making payments online, a concept that is still new in Benin. She not only gives advice on how the company should be run, she's also a co-financer. The 30 employees regularly receive training.
Projects that are developed in the education and health sector, for example, cannot be carried by the government alone. Companies need to develop areas of services and strengthen them. This can then support the state effectively, and that is not too costly.
The tiny West African nation of Benin has an average per capita income of just over 600 euros a year, making it one of the poorest countries in the world. Many development projects focus on a better supply of drinking water or electricity, that alone is not enough to strengthen the country's sustainability. Kileta Muyabi says,
of course you can go ahead with such projects, water or electricity. These projects are becoming more and more important, but that should not hinder Africa from being guided by global development. They also need to think about the internet and develop online shops parallel to the digital information systems.
According to a study by the World Economic Forum, many countries in sub-Saharan Africa trail far behind when it comes to making use of the opportunities offered by information and communication technologies. But Gileta Muyabi says things are looking up in her country, and she's not the only one who sees the improvement. A recent economic study by the World Bank shows that Benin has moved up 16 places and is now ahead of Cameroon and Senegal.
Alexa Meyer compiled that report. History was made on Monday at the world's only permanent war crimes court when Malian jihadists pleaded guilty to attacking the city of Timbuktu and playing the lead role in the destruction of cultural sites. Ahmad Al-Fakhi Al-Mahdi is the first Islamic extremist charged by the International Criminal Court in The Hague and the first person to face a solo allegation of cultural destruction. Al-Mahdi told judges on the opening day of his trial that he regretted his actions and begged the people of Mali to forgive him. Africa Link's Isaac Mugabe filed this report.
Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar!
While chanting Allah Akbar, meaning God is great, Al-Mahdi's men, armed with shovels and pickaxes, laid waste to 14 of the city's 16 mausoleums inscribed on the World Heritage List. The group claimed the ancient buildings were monuments to false idols and did not conform to their version of Islam. The one-room structures had housed the tombs of the great thinkers of the famed African city, which over the centuries came to be revered as a center of Islamic learning. It lies some 600 miles northeast of Bamako, the capital of Mali, where the United Nations now has a large contingent to protect the people there against Islamic terrorists. At his trial on Monday, Al-Mahdi wasted no time to plead guilty.
Ladies and gentlemen, with deep regret and pain, I have to enter a guilty plea, and all charges against me are accurate and correct. I'm really sorry, and I'm really remorseful, and I regret all damages that I have caused the community in Timbuktu, my family, and my country.
Reacting to Mahdi's trial, Hale Usman, the mayor of Timbuktu, praised all those who are involved in ensuring that he faces justice for the crimes he committed.
Justice has been done. We thank the Almighty God and all our partners, all those who have helped with his arrest, so that today justice can be done. Everyone should know that nobody is beyond justice.
Founded between the 5th and the 12th centuries by Tuareg tribes, Timbuktu's very name evokes centuries of history and has been dubbed the city of 333 saints for the number of Muslim sages buried there. Rights activists have also hailed the landmark trial as it sends a clear message to other jihadists that they will not get away with crimes committed against culture sites. One such activist, Alassane Ouangara from the International Human Rights Federation, had this to say.
The people of Timbuktu have been waiting for this trial because those people have caused a lot of harm to the population. This trial must go ahead so that the perpetrators know the harm they have done to the people of Timbuktu.
The judgment will follow later. However, the defense and prosecution have struck a deal under which Mahdi will not appeal a jail term of between 9 to 11 years.
Isaac Mugabe reporting.
Making a difference.
Autism is a globally recognized brain disorder which researchers continue to look into. But without a permanent fix to the condition that affects communication skills, especially among young children, providing the best of care is crucial. In Ghana, a university graduate has developed a mobile app to help in providing better care for patients and also to enable such persons to communicate with the larger public. Isaac Kaleji brings us this report.
Volunteers at an autism center in Accra are engaging some children suffering the disease. The disease has affected the children's communication and interaction skills. A lot of special care is required to make them feel better and live a normal life. At this autism center, children play drums and dance to visitors. Ghana has more than 10 special schools for such kids in the southern part of the country alone. Communicating with them remains the main challenge for volunteers, teachers, and most importantly, their parents. That's where software developer Alice Amwaku comes in.
Alice is a digital social entrepreneur who believes in using technology to solve various social problems. Basically, I started when I was in university, I think 2 years ago. I did IT in the university, but then I still had the passion to help make a change for society. The app has three basic features. One, that is the SMS helpline feature that supports parents with an SMS, you know, information plan to be able to get adequate information from professionals. And then two, the app has a feature which is the picture-ation communication system that supports their children to be able to communicate well in improving on their communication challenges. And then the third feature of the app is the awareness platform that helps the society to be able to get adequate information on autism.
Alice says it hasn't been easy embarking on this project to change attitudes towards autism and how to treat those suffering the disease.
The basic challenge we encountered was one, because people actually didn't know about autism, it was a bit difficult for them to even accept such an application. So we had to do a normal autism awareness before introducing the app. It was a bit difficult also getting professionals, that is the doctors, on the SMS helpline, because in Ghana we have just about 5 neuropediatricians across the country and it's quite difficult getting them.
Matilda Abrokwa is a teacher in an autism school in Accra. She has used Alice's application on autism. She speaks highly about the creation of Alice's application and how it is helping to provide better care for children with the condition.
Because children with autism or people who have autism have a problem with communication and also their imaginative thinking. When you try to explain something to them in text, they don't really get it. But once you show them pictures, they are able to tell what you are trying to communicate with them.
Alice's innovation has now helped many Ghanaians to understand autism and its challenges. Her application has also helped parents to communicate better with their children and provide better care.
Isaac Kaleji reporting.
For more about Africa Link, go to dw.com/AfricaLink. Find out about Africa Link's partner stations. Send us your feedback in a text message and sign up for our newsletter, dw.com/AfricaLink.
And now, before we leave you, a reminder of our main stories. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry announced that the U.S. will help finance next year's general elections in Kenya and provide new aid to South Sudan to help in the provision of basic needs. The inauguration of Zambia's president-elect has been put on hold due to a pending constitutional court ruling on the election results. And Malian jihadists plead guilty to orchestrating the destruction of historic mausoleums in Timbuktu. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Please remember, we welcome your comments on this program, either in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, an SMS to country code 49160-957-59510, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Do join us again same time tomorrow. I'm Eunice Wanjiru in Bonn. Have a great day.